It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Some things are worth fighting for, and some people have fought harder than others. And my next guest has certainly fought the fight, and I can't wait to talk to him to tell you the truth. I don't think I've ever interviewed you, Robert, in person, so this is going to be a pleasure. Let me just say that we're coming to you live from the Phoenix Park Hotel in downtown D.C., where everything happens, good and bad. There are about 60 radio hosts here. And we've been covering specifically the issue of immigration. And, of course, this has been a very big week for immigration in the nation's capital. The Congress is pondering these two bills on immigration, Kate's Law, and a couple of other bills with various regulations in them. They're both good, as I understand it. It'll just be interesting to see if they go to the Senate and get passed. That's always the question about it. We've interviewed all kinds of people about Border Patrol. We've talked about people getting legal status through marriage and it going south. We've talked about victims of crimes, but we have really not spoken about something that I talk about a lot, as you know, and that is the threat of jihadis coming here, something that we have experienced, the attacks, the fact that some are coming over the border, not only the southern but the northern, and on it goes. And so, and then there's this whole business of vetting, extreme vetting, as the president calls it. So we have not explored that this week, and we're going to with the next guest. Robert Spencer is the director of Jihad Watch, which is a program that comes out of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. He's the author of 16 books, including the New York Times bestseller, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades, The Truth About Muhammad. His latest book is The Complete Infidel's Guide to Iran. Oh, that's got to be interesting. Great titles, Robert. And coming up in 2017 will be his new book, The Complete Infidel's Guide to Free Speech. Oh, my goodness. And Confessions of an Islamophobe. Those are such offensive titles, Robert. I'm surprised you can fly anywhere in safety. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
You know, I have to ask you first, David, I've known David Horowitz for so many years. And, of course, David famously was a radical of the 60s. His focus... for most of the years I've known him, has been on communism and the left and all of the roots of that. So tell us what is the intersection between jihad and what David Horowitz and the Freedom Center focuses on? Why is there a nexus there?
Well, you know, actually, David Horowitz has written a book about that called Unholy Alliance, about the nexus between the left and the jihadis and how they're working hand in hand. And this is, of course, something that I've written about a great deal as well, because it comes up pretty much every day. And when I track jihad activity at jihadwatch.org, this comes up all the time, that the left essentially hates America, hates the West, hates Judeo-Christian civilization, and so they see in Islam a kindred spirit, a group that's been an or ideology that's been arrayed against the West for 1,400 years, and they see themselves as kin.
You know, just to prove that point, I wish I'd pulled it. I was trying to remember. I heard briefly that yesterday Iran had issued a statement about the president's executive orders on travel, and they called it hateful and bigoted. I think those were their words, and I said to laugh, you know, it's like, that. This is, you know, if this weren't like exhibit A of how the left and the jihad movement works together.
Oh, absolutely.
Same language.
And they choose that language very carefully, because the Iranians are, of course, they're not idiots. They're very sharp, and they know that that kind of language will resonate with the left and cement the alliance.
And the same way with the Muslim Brotherhood and CARE. They're
absolutely
very, very clever.
Very clever.
And they do use the same language. They're the ones that came up with Islamophobia, aren't they?
Yes, they did. The International Institute of Islamic Thought coined the word in order to have a word that they could use to stigmatize and demonize any honest discussion of the jihad threat. And the really insidious aspect of it is that they call Islamophobia any attacks, vigilante attacks by idiots against innocent Muslims, which nobody's in favor of, and they conflate that with honest discussion of the motives and goals of jihadis in order to intimidate people into thinking there's something wrong with opposing jihad terror.
Robert, what did you write about before 2001, 9/11?
Before 2001, I was a ghostwriter, and I wrote several books. One of them was a New York Times bestseller, but the ghostwriter's creed is you cannot reveal.
That's what your bestseller really is.
Yes.
You know, the last time I remember actually seeing you in person, where we were talking, and this wasn't a lot of conversation, was we were at CPAC. I think you will remember this, and Andrew Breitbart was standing out in front. I was chatting with him, and you were in the proximity, and you were getting accosted by, I don't know if it was jihad. Well, no, it wouldn't be jihadists, but it was
leftists.
It was leftists. Yeah, you were being accosted by them, and you guys were arguing, and Andrew was, I'll never forget that.
Yes.
So, and that's kind of become your life. I mean, I do it in a different way, too. This is the thing. We have to speak the truth wherever we are. But honestly, Robert, you go and lecture. And something that happened to you recently, we have to talk about. I'm sure you're tired of talking about it, but you were in Reykjavik, Iceland, just in May, as I understand it, right?
Yeah, that's right. And we had an event there. It was extraordinary, really. It was a great event. Iceland only has 300,000 people, and there were 500 people at our event. Now, 500 people would be a nice crowd in the U.S., but you can imagine, think about it, that there's 300 million people in the U.S., and so that's tantamount to having a crowd of 500,000 people here.
Yeah, and
it
you
was
were,
a huge event.
You were there to talk about
the jihad threat.
The jihad threat.
Yes.
So how did the event itself go?
It went very well. There was an imam in the audience, and he asked hostile questions, and I answered them, and the crowd was very involved in the talk, and many other people asked good questions. It was a great event, and we were all very happy. The other speaker and I and the organizers went to a restaurant afterward, and that's where the adventure started.
Yeah. And that adventure was that you were poisoned and someone tried to kill you.
Yeah, a young man came up and he said, "Mr. Spencer," and I said, I always answer yes. And they said,
"You better stop answering yes." You say, "Oh, no, that's the man over there." Try that next time, Robert.
Yes.
Anyway, so.
Said he was a big fan and shook my hand, and I didn't really think anything more about it, but apparently slipped something into my drink. And so I was the night in the hospital.
But then a second person came up after that, right?
I do think it was the first one who did it because he was closer. He was right over the table, and he could have easily slipped something in the drink, whereas the other fellow was over to the side, and there were a few people in between him and me, so I don't think he
And he cursed
it.
You.
Yes,
he was very clear.
I think they were together. But
all right, I'm just curious. What was their appearance like?
I
get trouble describing people now, but what?
Well, they were young men. They were young Icelanders, and so
European-looking, sort of.
Yeah, Europeans. Mm. One of them was bearded. One of them was clean-shaven. Mm. The clean-shaven one is the one I think did it. The Icelandic government, even though it's such a small place, Iceland, and I was able to find the guy's name and phone number before I left, and I gave it to the police, and they also were able to, one of the people who invited us there, he was able to get the name of the other guy. And so the police have all the information, but they've done nothing. They did an investigation, but there have not yet been any arrests. And I think, well, it's a leftist government, the European Union. They are. If I were Linda Sarsour or some other prominent leftist, then certainly they would have had arrested the people by now. But it's not politically expedient for them to arrest somebody who poisoned me.
So what did they tell you officially? We can't find anything?
Yeah,
or
there's
just
no way to prove it and so on. I mean, it seems to me that the trial should be the time to try to attempt to prove it, but there's plenty of evidence that the fellow who came up and shook my hand is the one who did it.
Did you initially think, like, I'm a food poisoning? What did I eat? It must have been the steak.
I knew immediately. I did not feel like I've had food poisoning before, and I know how it feels, and this was nothing like I had ever experienced. This was something else altogether.
Well, and the thing of it is, poisoning, of course, seems to be the way that people, certainly in the Russian sphere, that brand of leftism is disposing of enemies, you know, whether it's journalists or...
And I think it is getting worse here. It's all in a line with that, that the left has been character assassinating us for years and saying we're racists and bigots and so on, and now they're stepping up and moving to outright assassination attempts.
You know, this is what I have learned just because Robert, I've traveled a lot in especially communist countries, whether it's Cambodia, the killing fields, the S-21 prison, Moscow, and the prisoners interviewing people in China. I've been to North Vietnam. My point is that I've learned firsthand and through other ways a lot about these regimes that kill people en masse. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I've learned as a result of that what you know well, is that the first step is dehumanizing.
Yes.
Just dehumanizing people, calling them pigs or calling them whatever. And so we are moving in that category, aren't we?
Oh, absolutely. And it's only going to get worse. The left is certain of its righteousness, and recently there were the neo-Nazi Richard Spencer, who's often confused with me, was slugged on a street in Washington, and all these leftists were applauding and saying, of course you should punch Nazis. And I thought, okay, great, but who decides who gets punched and who doesn't? And what if somebody decides they're going to punch all the leftists, and then there's going to be civil war in the streets? But this is what the left apparently wants.
So we're coming into a new day, and certainly we saw with the riots in California, Mayo Yiannopoulos, whatever his last name is pronounced, the riots, they wanted to do him harm. They wanted to do Ann Coulter harm. They wanted to do Charles Murray's harm. It's just, it's unbelievable. And of course we've seen on videos, and this is different, slightly different, but not really, same category, the knockout game, where you just hit random people because they happen to be white.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's really amazing, isn't it? These
yes.
are the things we used to read about when we were kids.
Yes.
About, you know, the things that didn't seem possible, whether it was George Orwell's, you know, book or what we knew about was happening in the Soviet Union. And here we are entering into that, and we are
yes.
the victims, our potential
Absolutely.
Going to be.
You know, the brown shirts, the Nazi stormtroopers, they used to go to universities, and if there were anti-Nazi professors, they would shout them down and scream at them and make it so that they could not speak. And I was at university at Buffalo in April, and I was shouted at and screamed at by these supposedly anti-fascist students who were the new Nazis, the new fascists, and they would not let me speak. And it's the same thing that happened to Murray and to Coulter and to the others, except that the event wasn't canceled outright, it was just canceled by the heckler's veto.
But of course, before the poisoning comes the language, the control of speech. And that's where we really are in the battle now. And that's, I guess, your latest book that you're coming out, Guide to Free Speech.
Mm-hmm.
Europe is just, it's just, I would say, gone. I don't know if you would disagree with me. It's like...
Well, you know, I always think of the sage philosopher Yogi Berra, and he said, it ain't over till it's over.
Yeah.
And I think that even if the states of Europe collapse and are Islamized and Sharia law is imposed, there will be resistance. And it's never over.
Oh, okay, we have to move to something else before we run out of time. Andrew McCarthy did a long article about the decision, the court overturning the lower courts on Trump's executive orders on immigration. But Andy said that he feels that the actual result of that was not a good one, that we've lost ground in that... the verbiage basically says you can't, it insists that we can't vet for religion, and yet how in the world are we going to do so-called extreme vetting or real vetting if we don't get into Sharia, which arguably isn't religion, but the Muslims would say that it is. So he feels like we're getting into murky waters. How do you feel about that? Are we able to really extremely vet if we don't talk about, you know, Sharia and the details of what that means and how people feel about it?
No, not really. But the thing about it is that I think there are ways to get around that. Now, I'm not a lawyer, and so all this has to be taken in that light. But the fact is that the initial executive orders, they contained the directive that there be a database of honor killings by refugees and immigrants in the U.S. Now, honor killing is something that's justified in Islam. And so they didn't say anything about Islam. Islam's never mentioned, but they're dealing with some manifestation of it that is at variance with constitutional principles. And that there are many other ways that could be done.
So you think it's possible, and
yes.
you're optimistic, God willing, that it will be done.
Oh, yes.
And are you traveling, Robert? Are you a little nervous about that? We only have 30 seconds here.
Am I traveling?
Anywhere. I mean, are you
sure,
nervous about traveling?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm going to take more precautions now after Iceland, but I'm staying on the road.
Okay. We need to pray for you. Jihad Watch, program of David Horowitz, Freedom Center, Robert Spencer, my guest, Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. I met a nice young gentleman last night. And I didn't know I was going to interview him today. I didn't remember that. And so it's kind of nice. Hector Garza is my guest. He looks like such a sweet guy. I can't imagine him being a mean Border Patrol agent, but I kind of think he is. He's the National Vice President of the Border Patrol Union. The Border Patrol Union is... What area is that?
So I'm part of the National Border Patrol Council, and we represent approximately 16,400 Border Patrol agents throughout the entire southwest and northern border.
All right. So, Hector, of course, your last name is Hispanic. Your first name is Hispanic. And I have to ask you some questions about this, because in the last election, and you know my last name is Rios, so you know I know something about this before I even ask these questions.
Of course.
You are a Hispanic Border Patrol agent. In the last election, we were told repeatedly that this president hates Hispanic people, because he wants a wall, that means it equates to hatred. And we're told that all Hispanic voters feel that way. Well, I don't exactly know even what the percentages turned out to be, but here you are, a Border Patrol agent with a Hispanic name. Is there blowback because of that?
Sometimes there is, and I want to think that some of the opponents like to spin this argument into a race issue. And this is not about a race issue. This is completely about border security, and this is about the security of the American public, and that's where the focus needs to be at.
Yeah, so your family, you know, so many times I think people just don't even understand that Hispanic Americans, many have been here for generations. I mean, like generations. And they're American, and that's very different than being an illegal immigrant coming across the border.
Yeah, and of course. So I can tell you for a fact that President Trump is loves people of Hispanic descent. I've met with Donald Trump several times and during the campaign trail. I think I met with him probably four different times. The times that I met with him, they were not photo ops for President Trump. Some of these meetings were private meetings, and that he held with our organization and some of the guys from our agency. So, yeah, this is not a race issue. President Trump cares about the American public, and we've been supporting him, and we'll continue to do so. And the way we do that is by relaying to him some of the information of the realities of the border.
One of the concerns is that things have not changed that much in terms of practical on the ground under Donald Trump. Not that he wouldn't want them to be different, but they're not different. Is that what you're seeing?
So, yeah, so I can speak about DHS, which is the Department of Homeland Security, and Customs and Border Protection. Under Secretary Kelly, unfortunately, what we've been seeing is that there's been a lot of Obama holdovers being promoted within the agency. Those same managers and leaders that were in charge of the Obama administration's policies that they were responsible for implementing catch and release, those managers that were responsible for killing morale amongst Border Patrol agents, it seems that they're the ones being promoted. And unfortunately, I don't think this information has been given to the president, and that's something that we're trying to accomplish. We're trying to accomplish for the president to know that we have a concern with some of those leaders that are being promoted because some of those Obama holdovers are still pushing those Obama-era policies.
And you're in Washington. Did you meet with the president, or have you guys had some influence this week since you've been here, some contact with him?
So there's been some information that we've relayed to the president at different times, and we're making sure that information gets to the president through different ways. Being here at the fair event is one of those avenues that we're seeking to reach out to the president, to reach out to the agency, to make sure that we get the right policies in place for the American public.
Where exactly are you patrolling?
So I'm a Border Patrol agent. I've been an agent for almost 17 years.
Wow!
And I've been assigned to the Laredo sector of the border. In Laredo, I'm a Border Patrol agent. I'm also the president for the union in Laredo, and I represent approximately 1,400 Border Patrol agents down there. And we patrol in the Laredo sector. What's interesting about the Laredo sector is that we have no wall in Laredo, and that's something that we've been pushing for. Now, as a council, we don't push for a wall along the entire stretch of the border. We do ask for a wall that is placed in strategic locations.
Is there, I don't know the geography there, are you guys on the El Paso, are you on the river, the Rio Grande, or are you back a bit?
Well, we actually have the Rio Grande River in the Laredo sector.
Okay. So you don't necessarily need a wall. I mean, are you able to really, are you then, as we've seen in pictures, you know, illegal immigrants bringing coyote bringing boats up and letting people out in the height of this influx of illegal immigrants from the southern border. And then we saw people, you know, making their way, and there was just no apprehension. Is that still happening?
So we know that the numbers have been coming down for the past couple months, and it's all directly tied to President Trump's hard immigration stance. Now, those numbers are coming back up. I think what's been happening is that the smugglers are realizing that a lot of things are changing on the border, and now they're taking advantage of that, and we're seeing those numbers go right up. That's where we're trying to sound the alarm bells and saying we need to get tougher on enforcement. If not, these guys are going to realize that we're not making any changes on the border. In Laredo, we do have the Rio Grande River, and a lot of people think that that Rio Grande River serves as a natural barrier. And something that we always talk about is that that river does not stop anything or anybody. We have people that walk across, swim across, wade across. You'd be surprised that people will cross 80 pounds of narcotics on their backs to get them to our communities. So we definitely need some type of physical barrier along the Laredo sector and along other areas of the border.
Have you seen there were a lot of people coming from Central America coming through Mexico, and we were hearing that even the Obama administration was actually getting the word out that people could come, and it was just creating chaos. So what's happening with that? Are you finding people from the Central America still making their way through that treacherous path to the U.S.?
Well, what's interesting is that under the Obama administration, President Obama pretty much rolled out the red carpet for these people. And like you said, they promoted catch and release. And people would come to this country, and as long as they made it to the border and crossed illegally, these people were being released into American communities. What we saw as soon as President Trump took over was that those numbers dropped significantly. If you look at the statistics and the percentages, crossings and apprehensions are at their lowest at this point. But what we've seen in the past month is that those numbers are slightly going up, and they're getting a little bit high there.
Because the word is going out that nothing's really changed. So it was just it was like an impression based on what he'd said publicly. Right?
Pretty much, and I think the smuggling organizations have actually realized that that not a lot has been happening on the border. That a lot of it is just a harsh stance, and I don't think it's due to President Trump's decision making. I think President Trump wants to make those changes. I think some of the Obama holdovers are the problem, and I think that's why we're here today doing this event and getting the word out that those holdovers that they need to go. They can't stay. They need to work with the with President Trump's new policies.
And we have to say Secretary Kelly is not helping. He's allowing that to happen, and he's putting some people in place he shouldn't, and he's refusing to hire some people like Sheriff David Clark that he should have hired. So we have a high-profile person on the cabinet that's really not doing the president's bidding, and it's very upsetting for most of us. So we just have to keep pressing the president to get the right people around him to do what he said he wanted to do and keep those promises. Hector, remember, I know you do, all those big facilities that were built around the border to house the alleged, all the women and children. It was women and children coming across, because it was a lot of young men, too, as I recall, but that didn't get so much play. And they built these facilities for them with playgrounds and housing, and they brought medical care, and they gave them attorneys, and they gave them cell phones, and then I'm not sure what else. But what's the state of those? I mean, they were built. Those were beautiful facilities. Are they still there, and are they still filled with people?
So many of those facilities have actually closed down because the crossing,
really?
Yeah, because the crossings dropped. Now, we do have the processing center in the Rio Grande Valley area, which is one of the bigger facilities in the nation. That one is still being maintained open, and it's got to maintain with a skeleton crew. That means that we're using minimal manpower to keep that facility running. But again, what's interesting about illegal immigration is that crossings might be low today, but tomorrow it might get busy again. And again, that's what we've been seeing. We've been seeing those numbers going up in the past 2 months. So they're still open right now. Some of them have been closed. But again, we need to make sure that we take a hard stance, because now we're going to be opening those facilities again, as well as many others.
You know, I'm confused about something, because I thought those facilities had been built by those huge, those so-called charity organizations that have been making money hand over fist from your tax dollars and mine. But it actually is Homeland Security that was building those and manning them. It was you guys that were overseeing that?
So, yeah. So many of those facilities were paid by American taxpayers. That money was not coming from charity organizations. That money to build all these detention facilities was being paid by the American taxpayer. We were footing the bill.
So now you're telling me that most of them are shut down.
Yeah, most of them have shut down.
And how long was that? They were all built. All that millions of dollars went for, what, a year and a half? That's just really unconscionable. It really is.
Well, and what we have to think about, Ms. Rios, is that Obama allowed this. Obama rolled out the red carpet for people to come across. Now, if you remember the past 8 years, the rhetoric was that these people were fleeing the violence in Central America, that conditions were very, very ugly. And I don't doubt that the conditions were bad in South America. But that was the rhetoric, that these people were fleeing violence in their countries. Well, nothing has changed in their countries in the past months since President Trump took over. And guess what? Those numbers went down. So things have not changed, and the numbers did go down. So that must tell you something, that they weren't fleeing violence. The only reason they were coming over here was because Obama rolled out the red carpet for them.
Hector, I'm going to go back to the theme I started out with, and because you're from a Hispanic family, and I know a lot about Hispanic families too. My kids are little Rioses. So just a human side, how do you feel that Americans who are Hispanic in origin feel about illegal immigrants coming across the border? Are they really okay with that?
So I can tell you for a fact, my parents were born in Mexico, and they came to this country legally, right? Now they're proud naturalized citizens, and they were Trump supporters. They believe that there's a rule of law. They believe that we need to have our laws enforced, and we need to have a border. This is not against any specific religion, culture, or race. This is about border security. Now, we know that there's a lot of people across the country legally that want to come into this country and work and do good things, right? But mixed in with those good people are some very, very ugly, dangerous criminals. I mean, people that are coming here to this country to commit very, very bad crimes. So I think from a border security standpoint, we need to treat everybody the same as far as screening them. And we need to know who's coming into our country. We cannot continue with the status quo where anybody can just come into this country without us knowing who they are.
You know, I think one of the things I was... I was watching, actually. I think I told you this last night. A silly movie on, I think it was Gidget Goes to Rome. I was, you know, that's the really serious stuff I fill my brain with. It was just a fun little puff piece that gives me a rest when I'm dealing with all these serious things. But it occurred to me that Americans love Europe. They love to go to Rome. They love the Italian music and the food and the pizza and the language and the history of it. And they love France and the Eiffel Tower and all this. Can you imagine for a moment if Americans went to those countries and started demanding that everyone speak English? If they started demanding that Americans be elected to office, we should be the mayors of your city. We should, you know, and you should come, and we should also be able to access your services. Our kids should fill up your schools, and you should educate them. Can you imagine the audacity of that? This is not about country of origin. This is not about ethnicity. This is about the sovereignty of your own nation. That's just wrong. It's wrong for a people to come in and demand that another country accommodate, care for them, and adapt their ways and feel guilty about wanting to maintain their own sovereignty and way of life. So I don't know. That's not really a question, is it? But I.
well, I think what's important is that if you just put it down, if you kind of base it on a perspective of your own home, you have your house and you have your family, either your spouse or your kids, and you can afford to have a few guests come over and for dinner, right? And you can have maybe two or three, you know, come over. But then if you start getting a whole bunch of different neighbors coming to your house and coming in, you're going to be overwhelmed. And all of a sudden, you're not going to be able to keep up with the facilities and with the food and everything that a house entails. It's the same concept. I wish we could help everybody in the world. I wish we could bring everybody here and help them out. But the reality is that we can't do that. The reality is that we have to maintain the integrity of our healthcare system, our education system, and our way of life. If we start bringing in people from all over the world, that's going to be very difficult. We can't afford that as a country. So I think that's something that we need to think about. And I think it has nothing to do with discrimination or with race. It just has to do with things that make sense and take care of the homeland.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with being proud of your own country. I mean, I always say, loving your country. Your country is your family. It's not your family like the people with your same last name, but it's an extended version of your family, and there's nothing wrong with wanting to take care of your family first. That actually makes a lot of sense. And so are you optimistic about the Trump administration's? Are you optimistic about what might happen here? 30 seconds here.
So we are. We're very proud of President Trump. We know that President Trump will listen. We have ways of getting to him, so we're grateful for that. And things will get better.
All right. Hector Garza, who, again, is the vice president of the Border Patrol Union. Thanks, Hector. We appreciate your time, appreciate your service to this country.
Thank you.
And we wish all the best.
Have a great day.
All right. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We met in Palm Springs a few years back.
Good to see you, man. You good?
Yeah. How you been? What are you doing? What do you think is going to happen this week? I mean, with the whole Russia thing.
Yeah, the Russia thing is just a big nothing burger.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't think that...
There's nothing there you can do. No. Yeah, the Russia thing is just a big nothing burger.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't think that...
There's nothing there you can do.
No.
All right. Well, that was just a shortened clip. Sandy Rios, by the way, that was the voice of Van Jones and the mystery reporter from the undercover reporter, Project Veritas. And Van, of course, is a communist. He's with CNN. He's an outright communist. It's amazing. He said that a few years ago when he went to work for President Obama. And I couldn't believe no one ever says they're a communist anymore. It was so out of vogue. But he's been very blunt about it. And he's saying right there that the Russia thing that CNN has been covering ad nauseum now for months is a nothing burger. Well, someone who's been covering that faithfully is Matthew Boyle. And Matt is right here with us. He is the Washington political editor of Breitbart News. Matt, thanks for joining us, first of all.
Yeah, thanks, Sandy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, Breitbart is like you're the hated, loved media outlet now. You know that, don't you?
Well, they certainly come after us all the time from the left and from the establishment media, and it's because of the fact that we're effective in holding these guys accountable. I don't know if you saw the news this week, but three of CNN's top editorial staff, including the head of their investigative unit, as well as a top investigative reporter who was Pulitzer Prize nominated and a Pulitzer Prize winning editor, had to resign as a result of being caught as a result of our investigation into their very fake news that they were pushing on this whole nothing burger Russia scandal. As you heard right there from the voice of
Van Jones
himself, it's a nothing burger. And then James O'Keefe and their Project Veritas team and their fantastic investigative reporting is fitting into this whole different bigger picture that we're seeing unfold at CNN, which is a network in crisis. CNN has no journalistic integrity. They have no credibility right now. They are falling apart in front of us. Jeff Zucker refuses to appear in public. I talked to Donald Trump Jr., President Trump's son, earlier this week, and he called on Jeff Zucker, the president of CNN, since they believe in on-camera briefings so much. Maybe Jeff Zucker should appear before the cameras and answer questions about what is now shaping up to be perhaps the biggest scandal in journalistic history.
Well, let's just say this. Jeff Zucker is the head of CNN. He was with NBC before. Mm-hmm. And Jeff Zucker, according to an earlier tape from Veritas this week, was the editor at CNN The producer at CNN, who was recorded, he said that Jeff Zucker, in a meeting, said to all of them, enough of this Paris climate change. We've got to get back to Russia. Everything Russia.
Right, right. And the reason why Jeff Zucker keeps pushing the conversation back to Russia, even though there's nothing there, according to a CNN producer and now Van Jones, and as I understand it, there are many more people inside CNN who believe that this is not a real story. But the reason why they keep doing it is because for two reasons. First, as the CNN producer that you're talking about, John Bonifield, who was caught on camera admitting that this is all about ratings. It's all about money. It's not about journalistic ethics or you know, he says that the ethics they teach you in journalism school, that's adorable, but this is a business.
He did
it's
say that.
All about money. It's all about money. But mm-hmm. in addition to that, there's a political motivation among people mm-hmm. in the media. And what we're seeing now at CNN, the New York Times, and many other places is a very fake news scandal, which is engulfing all of them. And it's a political motivation to try to hurt President Trump.
Yeah, I don't think anybody that's paying attention and really has an honest, an inclination toward honesty. Honesty can see that, Matt. I guess I wonder, you know, I've known you for a bit here, and you're a good journalist, but you're young. So my question is, where did you go to school, and what did they teach you about that cute little, whatever he said, what did he say that's cute? What word did he use?
Journalistic ethics, right? Integrity,
yeah.
Or
yeah,
I forget the exact word he used.
Yeah, yeah.
But basically, I went to journalism school at Flagler College in St. Augustine, Florida, and in American University. I didn't actually stay for my whole master's at American University. But, I was taught personally by a CBS White House correspondent, by reporters for major daily newspapers throughout the country. What's going on at CNN right now is bigger than the Jason Blair scandal. It's bigger than the Stephen Glass scandal. It engulfs the entire network. The president of the network is engaged in an active cover-up of the biggest journalistic scandal in history. He refuses to appear and answer questions. Their public relations department will not answer questions about this. This is hands down the it dwarfs Rathergate, makes Brian Williams making stuff up look small. Every single person at CNN is involved in this. Every single they are literally using their editorial newsroom. And the reporters, editors, and anchors are involved in a cover-up.
You know, Matt, even to make this bigger, I had a listener write me probably 6 months ago, before the presidential election. He's from another country. I believe he's from somewhere in South America, Colombia maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, I'll tell you the reason why the world hates Trump. It's because the whole world gets CNN. And CNN brings a steady diet of hatred and denigration of him worldwide, not just affecting this country, Matt, but affecting the entire view of the world of Donald Trump and, of course, of all things political.
Yeah, so there's this recent study that showed that 93% of CNN's coverage of President Trump has been negative. That is clearly not. Look, President Trump deserves scrutiny when he screws up. And by the way, we have no problem doing it at Breitbart. We've done it many times. We've held him accountable on things like the health care bills that are going through Congress, which there's all sorts of issues there, with immigration, things that he hasn't followed through on his promises, and so on and so forth. There are plenty of things that President Trump deserves scrutiny on. 93%? No. There's a lot of successes that this administration's had. And what CNN is doing is a disgrace to journalism. It is a failure of media ethics. And again, it starts at the top.
You know, Matt, Jim Acosta, of course, is on tape this week shouting at the press secretary. I'm sorry, trying to assimilate a million names about a million things today. But the press secretary's name is what? Help me.
Sean Spicer.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Sean Spicer yelling at him off camera about turn the camera on, because you don't turn the camera on. So Jim is, of course, from CNN. What is your view of that as a journalist?
I think that you can do a mix of on-camera briefings, off-camera briefings, and so on and so forth. What Jim Acosta is doing is not journalism. He is doing grandstanding to try to make himself famous. And again, if they believe in on-camera briefing so much at CNN, then where is Jeff Zucker in the public relations department and the head of human relations who are involved in their internal investigation to look into this? Newt Gingrich is calling for a special counsel to dig into this scandal at CNN. This is the biggest scandal in journalistic history, and they're refusing to answer questions. If they believed in on-camera briefings, they would have Jeff Zucker in front of the cameras to answer questions about the scandal engulfing their entire network right now.
Matt, you guys, Breitbart was removed from the briefings, are at least not invited. I don't know exactly what you do. You do. You know what the exact words are. That happened probably about 6 months ago, 7 months ago.
Well, we've had a reporter at the White House since 2014, and
so what happened?
It's separate than the White House. It's the Senate press gallery. So we're in a battle with the and that's a board of reporters throughout the media. We're pretty sure we're going to win this fight in the end, and we're going to get credentials on Capitol Hill. We're not worried about that, but we have no problem with the White House right now.
Well,
so.
I thought the whole idea of opening the press conferences up to a broader spectrum of, you know, news, not ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, and the cable outlets, but others like Breitbart was brilliant. Don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. By the way, what Sean Spicer did to bring in Skype questions and all sorts of other things was fantastic. It's the openness that we're seeing in this White House is unprecedented. So, you know, to continue to hear whining that is not based in fact from people like Jim Acosta is just, it's a disgrace to journalistic integrity. I think Jim Acosta, if he really believes in on-camera briefings, should expect one from Jeff Zucker before he gets another one from the White House. And if Jeff Zucker won't do one, then maybe Jim Acosta and Jeff Zucker should step down.
All right. Okay, Matt. Matt Boyle, Washington political editor for Breitbart. Thank you, Matt. Always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you, Sandy.
So you take care of yourself, and we'll talk soon. All right. Well, that's the way it is. You know, CNN is really in the crosshairs. There's no question about it. I don't really know what the government can do. I don't know if a special counsel can investigate a news organization because it is the free market. But it's true that CNN has done tremendous damage. The misreporting is not recent. I think maybe it's just becoming evident. You know, I've often said that when I travel the world, no matter where I go, I turn on the television, there's CNN. And I remember, and it's always dreadful news. It's just an amazing, I don't even know why people would watch it, but they do. I guess they feel like they're finding out what's going on in the United States. But when you go internationally and watch CNN, I remember watching it in a hotel room in Mesot, Thailand. I was in a remote place. There were like geckos crawling on the walls, but I got CNN. I had MTV and CNN. And CNN's constant programming was about the environment and how we were destroying it. And video after video of the horrible things that the West is doing to destroy mankind. And that was what they were doing. I don't know what you can do about that. I mean, that is propaganda that has been fed to the world now for decades. Propaganda of the worst kind. And if they could stop that, I would be all in favor. You know, the opposite of that is I remember being at the Grand Bazaar in Istanbul, Turkey. We had been out for a very long day, and I hadn't bought gifts for any of my family and friends, and I only had a few minutes. We weren't there to shop. It wasn't a tourist trip. It was a business trip. So the driver let me off to run into the Grand Bazaar, which I did. I ran in and I went to the first T-shirt vendor because I thought T-shirts are easy. And so as I was doing my business through an interpreter, the vendor is counting out the money, and then he looks at me and he goes, "I see you on TV." Now, this is Istanbul, Turkey. This is the T-shirt vendor at the Grand Bazaar. He said, "CNBC? MSNBC?" Then he goes, "Fox News." And, of course, I did work for Fox for 8 years. So I'm in Istanbul, and they're getting Fox News. And I guess the good news, that was good news to me. It was funny, but it was also good news to me because I recognized then that there was another voice bringing the news to the world besides CNN, because I think CNN has dealt out a great amount of poison. As I've just said, well, we'll see what's going to happen. This is a very busy time. Healthcare, we'll see what's going to happen with that. It seems like Ted Cruz has a good proposal to make sure that each of the states, if they have just one Obamacare exchange, then the free market could come in and offer other ways for people to cover themselves that would not force them to take coverage that they don't want. And so that's a big plan on the bill, on the table. Also, Rand Paul is coming up with what he thinks is a great idea. We'll see, which is to separate the votes. I'm all in favor of that, always have been, to have one vote on repealing Obamacare completely and another vote to do whatever it is that they feel they need to do to replace it, which I actually don't think they should try to do, but I'm sure they're hell-bent on doing that. So that's in the works, and of course, the House is now going to be considering those two bills on immigration, the Kate's Law, that Bill O'Reilly was so famously pushing before his demise at Fox News. But that's actually going to come up for a vote in the next few days, and we'll see what happens in the Senate. My understanding is that Senator McConnell, who has never been a fan of strong immigration support, at least not for voting on it, is going to push for votes in the Senate. Why would he do that? Because he knows that there are Democrats coming up for election in this next cycle, and that will be an issue in their district. And so, you know what I say? Whatever his motive, I'm happy he's going to bring those things to a vote. So that's more good news. And, of course, the people that have been at this radio row this week are descending on the White House, whether it's the victims of illegal immigrants who have suffered, so lost their children, lost their husbands, lost their wives. They went to the White House to lobby the president for stronger laws and protections. The Border Patrol has been at the White House also this week, visiting privately with the president, trying to make sure he understands that under Secretary Kelly, some of the same bad practices that were occurring with Barack Obama's administration are continuing. Catch and release. The word is getting out to the coyotes that there really isn't much difference. And so that they can start bringing more people across the border, it really won't make that much difference. So Border Patrol agents are trying to get the president's ear to tell him that Secretary Kelly is ignoring the president's wishes and something needs to be done about that. So it's been a very busy week, and I appreciate you joining me. We'll be back. Next week is the 4th of July, and I hope you have a wonderful time celebrating this wonderful country that we've been so blessed with your family and friends. This has been Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.